Here's a question that I'd like for you to address later on in the program, and that is, why do people still live in environments that are inhospitable, that at one time had a high quality of life, vibrant, beautiful, engaging, challenging, but also rewarding on so many levels? And today, not all of that, but much of it has been changed, some completely eliminated. And now we have a two-class society, those who have been obedient and taken their vaccines and now get the process started of having an identity card. Where will that lead to? Max Blumenthal explains from the Gray Zone today on that. But what about the rest of the people who have legitimate reasons to question that vaccine? Maybe they already have COVID and therefore have a 1,600% natural immunity. Maybe they have medical conditions that prevent them from getting the vaccine. We're not taking into consideration the legitimacy of any of this. All of these people have been lumped together as the deplorables, have been attacked, and now we have an apartheid vaccine society. Those who have and those who should be relegated to no empathy, no consideration. What does that mean that we become as a society? We are then a prison if you live in that environment voluntarily. I would absolutely agree. This is insensitive, but who said it? Quote, those who enter our country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law. And because we live in an age where terrorists are challenging our borders, we simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, and unchecked. Americans are right to demand better border security and better enforcement of the immigration laws. End quote. Actual quote. You know who said it? Give us a call. 888-874-4888. A special commentary today, written based upon what I see is the contradiction between what is promised and what is delivered from all of our institutions, and especially the media. It is entitled, You Want the Truth? Here's the Truth. That'll come in about 10 minutes. But first, we're going to go to health and nutrition, as we always do. The International Crop Research Institute says that a large study shows regular millet consumption can combat anemia. That's good, because a lot of people have anemia. There's 22 separate studies that were analyzed, and they found that just consuming millet, I make millet, I make it once a week, put it in a fridge, it takes 3-4 minutes to make, and it is a delicious, tastes a little bit like almonds. And it's yellow and makes a nice base for a cereal in the morning. You can add your protein to it, your vegetable proteins. You can add anything to it. And it's got a high-quality fiber. But it's also got the blood-building nutrients in there. So just something to consider. This was published in Frontiers in Nutrition. Also, from the University of California, resveratrol, I've mentioned it many times, Res, R-E-S, Vera, V-E-R-A, Trol, T-R-O-L, can help correct hormone imbalance in women with PCOS. And this was published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Now, for those of you who don't know what PCOS, it stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. It's the leading cause of infertility in women. A lot of women suffer from it. Between 5 and 6 million people in the United States alone. And so now there is at least an answer to it. And by the way, just so you understand, women who have this produce slightly higher amounts of testosterone and other androgen hormones than average. And although these reproductive hormones are typically associated with men, women also have small amounts. And the elevated level in women with PCOS can contribute to irregular and absent menstrual periods and infertility and weight gain and acne and even excess hair on the face and body. And women who have PCOS also face a higher risk of developing other health problems like diabetes. So along comes resveratrol. It's one of a group of plant compounds. They're known as polyphenols. And yes, you can get them from grapes, absolutely, but you can also find them in nuts, and they're strongly anti-inflammatory. But they also help lower your PCOS levels of testosterone, as well as dehydroestrone sulfate, or DEAS, another hormone that the body can convert into testosterone. So it makes a big difference. And this was a series of randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial at the Poznan University of Medical Sciences in Poland. It's just something that can help, another piece of the puzzle. Also, we have over-lathered our bodies with sunscreen without looking at the ingredients or the studies showing that long-term use can cause health effects, including cancers. Better to take your really good antioxidants before you go into the sun, not spend too much time in the sun, direct sunlight, and then take them when you come out, because that can definitely trap the free radicals caused by the ultraviolet light. And also coconut oil is good, protecting you. Here's the latest on what you should consider about most of these sunscreens. This is from Oregon State University. So the sunscreen that contains zinc oxide, which is a common ingredient, loses much of its effectiveness and becomes toxic after just 2 hours of exposure to the ultraviolet radiation of the sun. And the toxicity analysis involved them looking at how this might impact the molecular and genetic and cellular levels. And this was published in Photochemical and Photobiological Sciences. It's just like that hand sanitizer that I suggest nobody ever use, because years ago we were telling you that it has, yes, it will kill bacteria, absolutely, but so will soap and water. The key is to rub your hands vigorously for about 30 seconds. It's the rubbing that causes the destruction of the bacteria and virus and parasites, and then rinse it off. But anyhow, just be aware that you better make sure you're getting the right sunscreen, because otherwise that zinc oxide degrades the organic mixture and causes a greater than 80% loss of organic filter protection against ultraviolet rays, which make up 95% of the ultraviolet radiation that reaches the earth. And also, the zinc oxide-induced photodegradation causes significant increases in the defects that they saw in the laboratory in toxicity. So the zinc oxide particles are leading to the introduction of toxins in the aquatic system. Just one more thing to be aware of. Also from the University of Southern California, if you interrupt your high-fat, high-calorie diet with just what I said yesterday, modified fasting cycles, you can live a longer, healthier life. This is from the University of California, published in Nature Metabolism. So we have more and more and more studies. I'm doing a major paper on that, and I'm also doing a major study in about 6 months from now to prove this in humans. It'll be a large study. It'll be a study done people at home plus people on campus, and I'm going to see how many of the actual blood markers I can change to lengthen the telomeres. The longer your telomeres, the tighter they're bound to your chromosomes, the longer you live. The shorter the telomeres, the shorter you live. It's as if you have biological clocks that you can't see. But if you were to look at a person with the ability to see these clocks, you would see that every organ in your body has a clock that's ticking away, and it's ticking down in one sense to senescence or programmed cell death. But you can then extend that by living the right kind of implementing healthy protocols. And what I'm trying to do in the first study of its kind is to prove how five things put together can add about 15 years onto your lifespan. Right now, it is a theoretical construct. It is a hypothesis, as all ideas start off, but then I will implement it with strong, strong background as far as the biological sciences. I have consulted with some of the world's leading authorities in the areas that I'm going to be experimenting with to get their input, so that when I start this study, we'll have a whole lot of people watching, probably upwards of 50,000 scientists, based upon the success I've had over the past 2 years with the studies I've done. And this is adding on to that, taking it to another step, another step, another step, until we can say absolutely positively, we can increase your lifespan and reduce your risk of death and reduce your risk of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, etc. So that's where we're going with all this. It takes a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of scholarship, and hopefully we'll have the results. But right now, in this moment, if you simply stopped eating your last meal, let's say arbitrarily at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, but don't eat another meal for 12 hours, that is that intermittent fasting. And that, along with getting rid of the high-fat, high-calorie diet, that lets you live a longer life. That's absolute good science that has been fully accepted now. There's so much that has been done by so many people, we can prove it. So, live a longer life, get rid of the high-calorie diets, get rid of the high-fat diets, get rid of all the sugar diets, and you're already on your way. Also, from Ohio State University comes a study about highly processed foods. That's your average American diet. It harms the memory in an aging brain. 4 weeks on a diet of highly processed food led to a strong inflammatory response in the brains of aging rats that was accompanied by behavioral signs of memory loss. Well, you know, that's what we have to look at. When you have a diet that is deficient in the omega-3 fatty acids and DHA in particular, these help prevent memory problems and reduce inflammation. And that's why everyone who has any form of memory problem or brain problem, I don't care if it's Alzheimer's or dementia. I remember once at the Tri-State Healing Center, a gentleman came in and the doctor said, Gary, this man says he knows you. And I walked over and lo and behold, it was a friend of mine, a professional friend. He had published a lot of my best-selling books. I mean, a lot. And he had ALS. Now, he smoked and he drank and had a bad diet. But he was advancing very rapidly. And so, put him on a protocol. And one of the very first things was, get rid of, detoxify as your first step. Get rid of all the junk food. And that was just everything that he had in his life. Everything was junk food. And then start the rebuilding process. First you detoxify and turn off the inflammation. Then you start rebuilding and rebooting everything. Reboot your brain. And over the next 2 years, he made major improvements. I mean, major improvements. What ultimately happened is I don't know, because he moved and I didn't hear from him. But I know the last time I saw him, he was able to walk, where before he had to use a walker to walk. He was able to walk with just a cane. And he said his memory had improved. Well, you turn off inflammation in the brain by using the omega-3 fatty acids and DHA. Walnuts will get that. Avocado will do it. Almonds will do it. And fish will do it. But you reduce that, and you're helping, because neuroinflammation and cognitive problems go hand in hand. And you get that when you eat the American processed diet. So you eat the average American diet, every single bite, you're producing some form of toxic reaction in the body. You just won't realize it at that moment. By the way, this study was published in Brain Behavior and Immunity. Good study. Also, a high intake of fatty acids from nuts, walnuts, pine nuts, pistachios. I'm not talking about salted and cooked. I'm talking about raw. Cashews are very good, by the way. They make great, if you blend in a blender or food processor, cashews with avocado, and then I would also use some toasted sesame oil with some chives, makes for a great form of a pate, or you can put it on top of a salad. did that yesterday, in fact. But the seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, in fact, I've got sitting here on my desk, sprouted organic pumpkin seeds. I've also got watermelon seeds, which have more protein in them, by the way. That's why the watermelon seed is so good to eat. And a sunflower, pumpkin, and sesame seeds. So you should have a bag of each of those and keep them in the refrigerator. And then just take out what you're going to eat that day and use those as snacks when you get hungry. Why? Because according to the University of Medical Sciences study, the healthy plant oils that you're getting and the nuts that you're eating and the seeds you're eating, quote, it lowers the risk of death. Why? Because of ALA. That's alpha-linolenic acid. That's what you find is the natural oil in nuts and seeds and plant oils. And it's associated with lower risk of death from all causes, and specifically from diseases of the heart and blood vessels. This was published in the British Medical Journal today. In fact, they found that higher ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, intake was associated with a much different outcome when it comes to death from cancer. So just remember, the alpha-linolenic acid is a type of omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acid found in soybeans and flaxseed oil. So just, well, one of the ways is to lower the cause of death. Something simple, right? And finally, we are not doing enough to look at the damage from antibiotics. But the University of Tübingen in Germany did. Now, we know that antibiotics can cure bacterial infections and save millions of lives each year. I'm fully supportive of that. What I do not support is the arbitrary use of antibiotics, for example, in cattle, just because the antibiotic allows them to gain extra weight. Therefore, cattle are sold by the pound. Because once you start consuming antibiotics in fish and chicken and pork and all these other sources, you build up this in your system and it begins to take advantage. And then one day when you need an antibiotic, it may not work. It also kills the good bacteria in your biome, in your mouth, and in your gut. That makes you far more susceptible to different diseases. So we should be doing much more on this. And by the way, why are we giving antibiotics to people with viruses like a cold or flu? Because the antibiotics are not going to work on a cold or flu. So we have to be aware that there's a benefit, yes, absolutely, but there's a downside. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 22 minutes into our program. Let's see if anyone called in and knew who made the comment. Anyone call in? Let's see, here we have Jenna from San Jose, California. Hi, Jenna. Who made the statement? Is Jenna on the line? No? She dropped. Okay. Well, I'm still going to have it. Drew from Westchester. Drew, your turn.
Okay. Was it Bill Clinton?
Nope, it was not Bill Clinton.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Drew. If you know who it was, then give us a call at 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, and Jenna, if you want to call back in, please do so. Just be patient. I'm going to do a commentary, an original commentary, written last night after I saw, well, it really was triggered by the Joe Rogan program where he had on Dr. Gupta from CNN, and he challenged Gupta on your station out and out lied about me taking ivermectin from horse serum. I didn't. I had a doctor's prescription. I took the regular human dose, and it was one of many things I took, and it helped me. And Gupta acknowledged that, and yet then Gupta runs right over and gets on a program and where they start to massage this like, well, but you know, the FDA says, as if the FDA has been right on anything. Think of all the drugs that you've taken with confidence that later were found out to kill people. There are hundreds. Let me just mention one that killed over 100,000 people, Vioxx. All right? Did the FDA apologize? Not at all. Did they force it to be banned? No. Did they take it off the market? No. They did none of the above. And they're loaded from top to bottom with appointees who come in and sit on advisory panels from the very companies that they're supposed to be overseeing. Total conflict of interest. But in any case, I just started thinking, my God, the media is so corrupt. And so we're going to deal with this, but in a larger context, in just a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We say we want the truth. Do we? The whole truth? In a recent opinion essay published on the pharmaceutical industry-friendly med page today, Dr. Matthew Wina, a medical ethics professor at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, propagated an old trope by accusing doctors who advocate cheaper, effective drugs and natural supplements for treating COVID patients as, quote, a cult of quacks. Such derogatory language is not uncommon among the adherents of radicalized skepticism, a faction within the conventional medicine that espouses a dogmatic faith in the puritanical scientific materialism. Although there are postmodern Victorians to be found within the sciences and humanities alike, medical skepticism has been gaining ground and shares commonality with the schoolyard bullying in defiance of science's hallmark of objective examination and scrutiny. Skeptics such as this Wynia are fond of expressing their disdain towards any medical theory or therapeutic modality that lies outside their prejudiced and narrow grasp of how valid scientific inquiry progresses. However, during the pandemic, this cynical domineering is likewise being adopted by government and health officials to disgrace those who would challenge undemocratic rules that strip away individual freedoms under the ruse of preserving public safety. And Wynia's background further explains this intolerance, and it tells us something about, to use Cornel West's terms, the spiritual blackout and moral decrepitude of the U.S.'s culture of governance and the puppet masters behind the official pandemic narrative. Prior to joining Colorado's medical school for 13 years, Wynia was a director at the American Medical Association, perhaps, in my opinion, the most discredited medical institution in America with a long history of speaking on behalf of drug makers' interests and profits. For over seven decades, the American Medical Association has served as a primary watchdog for Big Pharma in its opposition to complementary and alternative medical professions. Following an earlier mass exodus of doctors from the AMA, today only about 12% of American physicians continue to hold membership. Although the AMA has lost its mandate's credibility, it nevertheless retains its huge coffers for profit funding. Despite its detractors and the erosion of its social contract with the larger medical community, the AMA, along with the CDC and the National Institutes of Health, are still determined to unify the profession into a monolithic organism that could dictate approved and disapproved medical theories and interventions. But it has been during the pandemic that this effort is unfolding more rapidly as dissident doctors and healthcare professionals who speak out against federal pandemic policies and their failures are being threatened with loss of licenses and jobs. What this skeptic doctor is saying is only a more recent example among many. Repeatedly, the unison we hear federal health agencies and the media incantations to follow the science. As a result, it is an assault against those who have lost faith in the preached verse by federal health officials from their vexing pulpits. However, this begs the question concerning whose science, whose truth we should follow. Who is the example, the exemplar of that which was right? Do we have the courage? Do we have the honesty? Do we have the character to look to see who has guided us correctly and who has misguided us? In an earlier discussion, we noted that modern medicine has deservedly failed to revere anything today as hard science. Due to its legacy of intrinsic biases and questionable motives, medicine is far from being in the same league as authentic and more transparent sciences such as mathematics and theoretical physics and chemistry. For this reason, since the late 19th century, there has been sporadic debates as to whether medicine should be properly understood as an art or a science. Moreover, today, proprietary pursuits and conflicts of interest have further transformed medicine into a commercial enterprise rather than an honest quest for impartial discovery to uncover facts and truth. The ancient ethic of medicine is a healing art, which upheld high moral standards and was practiced out of physicians' deep compassion and empathy to relieve human suffering, has today been buried by institutional bureaucrats and professional medical school administrators and pharmaceutical executives, whereby nobody can find the moral backbone of medicine's grave anymore. If there's any lesson the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us, it is that conventional medicine is largely a mockery of its original ethical foundations. Risk versus benefit ratios to drive health policies have become fabricated theatrical displays of the media to reenact the drive for profits. For example, what are people to make of the wide discrepancies between the Pfizer-Moderna trial reports claiming 95% vaccine efficacy for infection when real-world evidence confirms the contrary? An Israeli Minister of Health report, the most vaccinated population in the world, shows that only a 39% prevention rate, and this figure will dwindle further during the passing months following inoculation because it is certain that COVID-19 vaccine immunity is very short-lasting. And a Harvard study published in the September issue of European Journal of Epidemiology reveals that the highest rates of the new COVID-19 cases are among, you guessed it, the most fully vaccinated nations. Therefore, somebody is flamboyantly wrong. Either our government officials or the medical data are wildly incorrect. Now, approximately 10 months since the vaccine rollout, more accurate independent data piles up and indicates that practically everything we have been told about the benefits of the COVID-19 vaccines to bring an end to the pandemic is more hype, fiction, than fact. It is permeated with lies. Favoring a vaccine regime and surveillance controls to track every American's movements, our leading health officials' moral decrepitude ignores the greater health consequences of their pandemic policies. Ineffective lockdowns, masks, social isolation, unsound critical care interventions such as relying upon ventilators, and the sole approval of the costly and ineffective drug remdesivir, at the exclusion of cheaper medications that can treat SARS infection for a mere $2.56, have brought about nightmares for tens of millions of adults and children. And yet the science, the real science, the independent science, the honest science, shows that these drugs that could have been used from day one are far more effective than anything at all, that the establishment has given us. They have lied to us. Not only have they gone that far, but they then have sought the restriction of any medical application of vitamin C or vitamin D or a healthy diet or ivermectin, any of the drugs, to help people so that they wouldn't enter a hospital and it could save their life, and up to 85% efficacy. Yet they chose, knowing all this, they chose to say no to all this. Aside from destroying what average people believe is normal life, the Fauci World Health Organization Gates Manifesto has likewise destroyed what is natural to our very humanity by erecting and fomenting a culture of fear and mental trauma across the globe. What is more worrisome is that all indicators suggest that this has been by intentional design rather than by short-sightedness or sheer accident or sheer stupidity. And the architects of this manifesto are not stupid people. Neither are the manifesto's harshest critics stupid people, such as Drs. Peter McCullough, Dr. Michael Yaden, and Dr. Wolfgang Woodard, and Robert Kennedy Jr. Yet when highly intelligent people reach the pinnacle of power, wealth, and influence, and compose the narrative of law and order, they are more susceptible to being bombastically wrong about practically everything. Dr. Michael Yaden, a former Pfizer vice president, has charged governments with engaging in psychological terrorism in order to turn everyone into a threat to everyone else in the streets. When Anthony Fauci lectures the American public that to criticize him is identical to chastising science itself, we are hearing the rhetoric of a mob boss. Fauci is the exemplar, an example of medicine's degeneration. It has become the truth said, an authoritarian regime of oppressors determined to force the citizenry into obedience. The promulgated message is that unless you have an MD behind your name, you have no authority, knowledge, or capability to determine what is sound science from what is false. Therefore, you must listen to those experts who have risen up the chain of medical command and are qualified to dictate what is in our best interest. Unless you have achieved that level of jurisdiction, you are a pariah, a treacherous heretic, if you dare to question their words. Sadly, legions of medical professionals and a largely naive public continue to believe that our federal health agencies take America's health to heart. Consequently, the establishment is making every effort to compare those who refuse the COVID vaccines with climate change denial, conspiracy theory, Trumpism, and religious fanaticism. Of course, there is no truth to any of these analogies. It is premeditative and deceptive messaging intentionally designed to create an illusion that the unvaccinated are a threat to the health of the nation. Therefore, employers, schools, and businesses should obey the decrees from on high and exercise their authority to bar anyone who refuses vaccination. What Biden and Fauci fail to realize is that an ever-increasing minority of vaccine opponents have now been injured by the vaccines. Yes, or have been subject to having family members and friends and classmates and co-workers severely injured or die. This segment of the population will continue to grow exponentially as the months pass and the vaccine's long-term adverse effects begin to manifest serious medical complications. How long can they hide the true mortality rate? How long can they subordinate the truth, subordinate the not just fatalities, but all the injuries, many of them for life? Medical professionals in the actual trenches of healthcare are more readily coming out in droves to declare that they have had enough. They are describing what is actually occurring in healthcare trenches, and what they are witnessing contradicts every meme the government dishes up to the media. In an interview on the Progressive Radio Network, Deborah Conrad, a physician's assistant, relied on her job at Rochester Regional Health United Memorial Medical Center in upstate New York. She recounted the growing number of incidents of vaccine-injured patients requiring medical attention in a legal letter to her former employer's president and chief medical officer by the Manhattan law firm Siri and Glimstad. She wrote, quote, "Personally, I treated 5 patients that presented new unprovoked deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolisms within 6 weeks of the COVID-19 vaccination. She has also seen patients that, after receipt of the COVID-19 vaccination, presented with a new stroke, autoimmune hepatitis, sudden bilateral pneumonia, or COVID infection, new arrhythmias, new seizure disorders, new cholera movement disorder, and more, end quote. During a 4-week period alone, Deborah submitted 50 vaccine adverse event reports, including 4 deaths, to the CDC's vaccine adverse event reporting system. Despite the rules put in place since the pandemic that vaccine-associated injuries and deaths must be reported to Veris, healthcare workers are not being instructed by their superiors to do so. In Deborah's case, she was reprimanded for her conscientious efforts, and for her actions, she was accused of being anti-vax proponent and fired. This is only one healthcare worker at a medium-sized medical facility. Now imagine the cumulative extent of COVID-19 vaccine injuries and deaths across the nation. 14,000 hospitals, 1 million active physicians, and 3.8 million registered nurses. We should therefore heed to the warnings of a medical holocaust in our midst. This carnage is not accidental. It has deeper causal effects that reach beyond the debate over good versus bad science in the COVID wars. More accurately, it is a sign of the deterioration across the length of our modern ethical spine. The decline of the nation's spiritual integrity has steadily declined for the past half century, with significant spikes of systemic institutional moral decay during the Clinton White House and fast forward. Yet it has been during the past several years that the nation's politic can be formally declared spiritually bankrupt. The federal handling of the pandemic is only a symptom of the gangrene of corporate and corporatist culpability inflicting government and healthcare policies. The mendacity of the Fauci-Gates manifesto neoliberal self-righteousness, similar to the SARS-2 virus, is intended to poison the very soul of the population to curtail opposition. This is one defining criteria of Cornel West's spiritual blackout that controls public discourse. The second is the systemic indifference and callousness throughout the federal health system and pharmaceutical industry. Where has there been any effort whatsoever by Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson to publicly announce an explanation for the other human-made pandemic of vaccine adverse events being reported around the world? The same has been true for the Biden White House and its health officials. Instead, there is a deafening silence as to injuries and deaths from COVID vaccines alone far outpace that for all vaccinations combined during the last 40 years. The vaccine's failures have only opened the door for new opportunities and greater profits to get big pharma's compromised and obliging agents sitting in the driver's seat at the CDC, the FDA, and Fauci's National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease to rubber stamp approvals for vaccine boosters and expand vaccination to younger age groups. In the meantime, Fauci and the National Institute of Health will reward researchers at various medical institutions and universities with lavish funding to conduct more and more studies for peer review to keep the vaccine scam alive. Those who buy into the naturalization of criminality within the medical establishment, West would warn, are making, quote, cowardice and avarice fashionable and compassion an option for losers, end quote. That's from Cornel West. The media has transformed Fauci into a market-driven celebrity to keep the pandemic alive. Cornel West's third criteria for our national spiritual blackout by permitting public interest, common good, or even rule of law to be undercut by big money. We need to observe how millions of Americans rush to expose their shoulders to the vaccine simply for, quote, short-term gains and superficial successes, end quote, from Cornel West. with the delusional belief that getting vaccination will return their lives to normal. A return to the right clubs, concerts, and other entertainment, access to certain private and public spaces, entry to school or college, and many other carrots that the Fauci-Gates manifesto is none too eager to hand out to those who would submit. This is an example of Big Pharma's predatory capitalism and its commodification of medicine at its worst, and the main government taking every advantage of the deep superficiality in the American mind to control their psyches. Fortunately, there has been a pushback. We will not speculate whether it is a sign of spirituality returning to our innate senses, or simply the biological drive to survive when overwhelmed by fear that the COVID-19 manifesto has seeded into the nation's collective psyche. Increasingly, Americans realize that getting vaccinated is a losing game of Russian roulette. We are playing with a three-chamber loaded revolver labeled Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer. During this month alone, we are observing promising signs of rebellion. The message is undoubtedly that the Biden administration and our federal health officials and the leaders of many other developed nations have been feeding the public a lie. In Chicago, a third of the city's police force defied vaccine mandates, and 203,000 member-strong International Association of Steel, Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Union, which represents the majority of America's transportation employees, publicly stated their opposition to unilateral COVID vaccine mandates. In New Mexico, 114 workers at Los Alamos National Laboratory, including a few dozen of the nation's top nuclear scientists, have sued the private contractor, Triad National Security, which runs the lab, or the U.S. Department of Energy for violating their constitutional rights over vaccine mandates. And the most recent good news is that a lawsuit is being filed against the U.S.'s CDC, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, for crimes against humanity under the Nuremberg Code criteria. Whether successful or not, the suit will nevertheless further brighten the spiritual darkness that pervades the halls of these institutions. In a struggle ahead to expose the COVID-19 manifesto as a crime against humanity, it is critical to remember history's great visionaries and sterling activists who stirred movements to beam light in times of widespread spiritual blackout. Cornel West calls these exemplary figures love warriors. We need to find the courage to act and sacrifice out of a deep compassion for the victims of the horrendous callousness exhibited by the pandemic's engineers and their misguided and heartless schemes. Cornel West would encourage each of us to become a love warrior, but not as a cliche to wear on a shirt label, rather to burn selfless compassion deep into our conscious as a reminder of certain universal truths that trump all the lies disseminated by the powerful and wish to exalt themselves as the rulers and masters of our lives. And that is the truth. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Your comments. Call us at 888-874-4888. We'd like to hear from you now. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'd like to hear what you think now. I've shared what is, we believe, a truth that needs to be heard. Rob from New York. Rob, your turn.
Hello. I think that quote at the beginning about immigration was from good old Barack Obama, who I think was the most hypocritical, cunning, and deceitful president we've ever had.
You are correct on both issues. Thank you for calling in, Rob. But we also had on the line Barry from Long Island. Barry, your turn. Not there? Okay. Let's see who else we have here. I will see who else. Marcus from Wisconsin, great state. It's a sustainable state also.
Thank you, Dr. Nall. And let me thank you for your vital and important work for humanity over so many years. much appreciated. I just wanted to share a short paragraph that I came across quite by accident that's pertinent to what you're discussing in the last half hour. It's a little book called The Scientific Attitude from 1941 by zoologist and an animal geneticist named C.H. Waddington, in a little chapter called The Emptiness of Fascism. He wrote, "The Nazis recognized more clearly than many scientists that science can only be concerned with the tangible welfare of real people, that the overriding personified state is not a scientific entity. They set themselves to destroy science and build up in its place a pseudoscience which would never overstep the boundaries fixed for it by their political beliefs. They persecuted scientists not only for being Jews or Democrats, socialists or communists, but for being scientists in the ordinary meaning of the term."
Well said. I appreciate that. Thank you for sharing that with us. And let's see who else we have. Rodney, who else do we have up? Jeremiah, always good to hear from you from Harlem.
Pleasure to talk with you, Gary. I was originally calling to answer the question, Barack Obama, the I have a drone president, but the previous caller beat me to it. But I'm really glad to be on the line because I wanted to ask you about something very specific, which is there's two areas of microscopy that are going on in regard to these quote-unquote vaccines, these so-called vaccines. One area is comparing vaccinated blood with unvaccinated blood. And I'm seeing a number of doctors doing these sort of left-right comparisons and showing some really troubling images of mutating blood cells in the vaccinated blood. And I'm wondering, have you looked into this? And, you know, how widely is this occurring? And is it possible for someone to have that sort of mutated blood occurring and they're walking down the street and really don't realize anything is wrong with them yet? And there's the other side of the microscopy coin, which is looking into the vaccines themselves. And I don't know if you've seen some of these images. There's a character, I don't want to call him character derisively, but there's a man named Stu Peters who has a sort of conservative show, and politically I'm not in alignment with him on hardly anything, but I really appreciate his coverage of the vaccine issue. And if what he's showing is correct, with, you know, various guest doctors that he has showing actual images of parasites in the Moderna vaccine, I forget the name of the parasite offhand, it has been identified, but an almost octopus-looking parasite, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine showing a light display that resembles a computer operating system, and the Pfizer vaccine showing these strange, what appear to be graphene oxide configurations, almost like a nanobot. And these are perhaps the redacted ingredients. So my point is, in regard to all of that I just mentioned, is if that's fake news, then please expose it as such. And if it's not, then please cancel the vaccine mandates and cancel the vaccines right now. Which is just, as a last point, I think one of the incredibly understated features of all of this, how badly a non-liability arrangement for the corporations goes hand in hand with redacted ingredients. No thanks, Jack. Neither of those things are acceptable, but the two of them together are just an outrage beyond outrage that I'm amazed that people are underreacting to in this way.
Jeremiah, I can answer your first question from the current issue of the European Journal of Epidemiology, September 30th, and there's an article entitled "Increases in COVID-19 are unrelated to levels of vaccination across 68 countries and 2,947 countries in the United States." Multiple authors on this. We'll go down to the findings. I'm quoting, and we've posted this on PRN.fm. Quote, at the country level, there appears to be no discernible relationship between percentage of population fully vaccinated and the new COVID cases in the last 7 days. In fact, the trend line suggest a marginally positive association such that countries with higher percentage of population fully vaccinated have higher COVID cases per 1 million people. Notably, Israel, with over 60% of their population fully vaccinated, by the way, it's much higher for those over 60, have had the highest COVID cases per 1 million people in the last 7 days. Mind you, they didn't have COVID. They got their vaccines. They developed COVID. Many are hospitalized and have died. So what they're saying here in the final report interpretation, this quote, "The sole reliance on vaccination is a primary strategy to mitigate COVID-19 and its adverse consequences needs to be re-examined, especially considering the Delta variant and the likelihood of future variants. Other pharmaceutical and non-pharmaceutical interventions may need to be put in place." Okay, there you have a major, major journal that doctors all over the world and public health officials rely upon. This is a heavyweight journal, and it's a major peer-reviewed journal, the journal, European Journal of Epidemiology, and that's what it's saying. So imagine now, go back to two articles that Richard Gow and I wrote in March of 2020, where we gave you all of the peer review, library medicine, science, specifically on viruses, on vitamin D, C, quercetin, astragalus, the other nutrients like selenium and zinc that all had outstanding science. Think of how many people in this audience began to use that prophylactically. And then when we became aware of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, we incorporated that. Now think of people using ivermectin prophylactically because it can stay in the body for about 70 to 80 hours. You only need it about twice a week in a low dose, 3 milligrams. And also low dose once a week, hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams. Think of how many lives would have been saved. Think of how many people in this audience didn't get a virus infection. They may have been exposed. We're all exposed to these at different times. But that doesn't mean everyone gets sick. No different than when you see a classroom of students and you say you have 30 students in the classroom and 5 of them end up getting the flu, but the rest don't. They were all exposed, the teacher and everyone else. It depends upon the state of your hygiene and your health, your immune system. So you try to work with those people, especially now seasonal. And that's also something else that's happening. We're now seeing how seasonal this is going to become. So we've got to get used to living with COVID like we live with all other viruses. And that's been the mistake. They thought they could vaccinate this out of existence. They were wrong. Think of the young people who committed suicide. Think of all the people whose intellectual development was stunted or denied because they weren't given a chance to interrelate as young people should and have to and must in a group setting. And think of the ones who were on opiates because they were depressed. They lost their job. Think of the people that died because of that. We had more deaths from opiates this year than ever before. These are the unintended consequences of what happens when you start off with a flawed foundation. Now, had they said, we're going to develop a vaccine, I would have said, fine. But in the interim, let's use all FDA-approved drugs that we know have antiviral effects that turn off inflammation, especially in the lungs and the heart. That would have been the smart thing to do. That would have been real science. But they chose not only not to do that, they chose to attack everyone who suggested that was an appropriate approach. So that attacking, with the mainstream media attacking ivermectin, when it has done more to save more lives in the world than all the efforts by Fauci and the United States government, all other governments combined. And the proof we've been sharing with you every day. But also then they deny the patients that anything that happens to them, young 15-year-old, 18-year-old, 22-year-olds, athletes, who suddenly take the vaccines and die of a heart attack. I just mentioned this as a quote. This is about Deborah Conrad. Conrad's community reportedly has less than a 50% COVID-19 vaccine rate. Even so, the rate of hospital admissions were approximately 90% vaccinated. So we're told that only the unvaccinated, we have an epidemic of unvaccinated. It's just the opposite. It's the vaccinated who are spreading the variant. and who are ending up with all these conditions. Now, to answer your second part of your question, yes, I've seen all the slides, but we don't know how many there are that contaminated batches with some form of parasite in them. That may just be a single batch. We don't know. So I don't want to speculate. Yes, I am familiar with Stu Peters. I don't care for his politics. I also don't like the way he interviews people. He seems to be angry about everything and just always he doesn't pace himself. He doesn't let his guests talk. Also, I believe that a lot of his guests, they're given a biographical introduction that when I look at their actual bio, this woman being called a doctor, she's not a medical doctor. Then you should state what her background actually is and what she has published, what she has done. So there's a lack of authenticity, yet here is the last part of that. When you close off all venues for legitimate doctors like Dr. McCullough and others, thousands, tens of thousands, to take their challenge to a legitimate place and debate the issue, which we should do, and you cut off all those, you won't see them on Democracy Now!, you won't see them on CNN, then they're going to go on to shows that, in my opinion, are not in their best interest. But they have no choice because there's too few forums. So they'll go on to an Alex Jones, who I oppose, and some of the others. That doesn't mean everything that is wrong that has been shown there. But you have to be very select. You have to do your homework. So that's where we're at. And that's why I did this commentary today. Oh, and by the way, finally, before we sign off today, it's now happened that the proof is in. Anthony Fauci's agency admits now it funded gain-of-function work in Wuhan. So, if they're now acknowledging it, that means he lied before Congress, and that's a felony. Will he be prosecuted? Not at all, because he's protected by the deep state and the Justice Department. So what else are they not telling us? What else are they redacting, as you said? This is not real science. This is political science. And we shouldn't have that when lives are at stake. Thank you very much for your call. Thank you all for listening. And by the way, I am interviewing for a special projects coordinator for my office in New York, an office manager, and an internet marketing specialist. If you have those skills, good pay, good working environment, you can send a resume today to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com. Have a nice day, everyone.